2-2 pitch. A swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
All right, welcome back to another Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. This is your host, Jeff Ponce. Alongside me this week is Ian Kundle stepping in for Dylan White. He's been busy mastering the Robo Scout and getting all those articles out to you. A lot of good stuff in there. A lot of good data that we've been digging on. So the model is fully cranked up with all the StatCast data behind it as well, which is obviously a big separator. So go and check those articles out. They typically come out on Sunday afternoons, early evenings before your fab gets running. So consult those before you throw in a couple of bids. I certainly do all the time. Ian, but we are here today. A lot of big stuff going on in the baseball world, but we're going to talk about some complex league standouts, some guys that are still there but are probably pushing toward a promotion, other players that have been promoted over the last week. A lot of interesting names. Before we get into that, we had a really unusual proposal, and I have a feeling that we're going to have a lot of weird stuff suggested over the next several months with these ongoing CBA negotiations between the owners and the MLBPA. So yesterday, the proposal from the owner side of things, from MLB, was once again chopping the draft from now 20 rounds to 12, correct?
Mm-hmm.
It was 12. And it would eliminate all high school players. Now, I want to throw this out there. This is not something that I think for a lot of us that are in the game having these discussions, particularly on the amateur side, which with the jump over to college baseball coverage this year, I've been a little bit more ingrained in than I had probably since any period since 2021, 2022. But I've been hearing elements of this plan kind of spoken about by front office people for a few years now, and I think you have too. I don't know if this comes to fruition or not, but it certainly seems like something that is on the roadmap for MLB of eliminating high school players from the draft and sending them all to college for development. It's really interesting how this would all come together and work. I think when you, the idealistic perspective on this is that, well, they'll go to college. College baseball is better equipped than ever before to develop these players. You know, there's more money in college baseball. There's opportunities for these guys to make money in NIL from the moment they step onto campus, et cetera, et cetera. That said, particularly on the position side, there's no leveling up in college baseball unless you start in, you know, the Big South and then you work your way to the Big Ten and then you work your way to the SEC or something. It's really hard to level up every year in terms of quality of competition. And that's not to say that in some of these smaller conferences, we've seen it throughout the tournament. Some of these teams have good pitching staffs, better pitching staffs than some of the Power Fives given on the given day that you're going to get that team. I look at a player like Dylan Cruz, and I always think to myself, Ian, if Dylan Cruz is able to leave college after his freshman year, Tommy White, Seth Beer, different talents, obviously those three guys, are they better if they're put into a pro development environment and are challenged by facing better competition, leveling up, more focused work that's less focused on winning? Because I think that's the big difference between college baseball and minor league baseball. No one there's some folks in the stands at Worcester that definitely care if the Woo Sox win, but the vast majority are there to eat hot dogs, drink a couple of cold beers, hang out with their kids on a summer night. They're not there, you know, living and dying on every pitch, you know, like they might be 40 miles east at Fenway Park. It's just not the same thing. So I think there's some good and some bad with that. With the position side of things, I think there's a lot of bad. You're not going to revamp a guy's swing. You're not necessarily going to ride with a really talented player who's having some swing and miss issues. And I think about a player like James Wood. If a guy like James Wood gets onto campus, there's a chance that he just blows up, takes off, You know, we saw it with JoJo Parker's twin brother this year, Jacob Parker with Mississippi State, who's now on the Cape with Chatham. Unbelievable freshman season. Really adjusted immediately to the college game and to the highest level in the SEC. But what if you don't? We see other guys, you know, Carter Brumbaugh is one from Arkansas who's now in the portal. I forget where he transferred to. But that's a guy where he gets to campus, doesn't earn playing time despite being a heavily recruited and scouted player, a guy that had pro opportunities last year. Even a guy like Diego Velasquez, who was with USC. Diego Velasquez was a top 100 player in the draft as a shortstop, gets to campus at USC, plays a little bit of shortstop, mostly as a defensive replacement in late innings. He's a pitcher now primarily, and is committed to, I believe, LSU. So you sort of look at the way the college game works, and so much of it is focused on winning baseball games and what's going to allow you to do that. Because a coach's job isn't based upon how many big leaguers or how many first round draft picks he gets. More often than not, that job is really dependent upon how many, almost every time, how many baseball games you win. I think there's probably a few schools in like the higher level mid-major range where there's a development focus. I think ECU's one that's done a really good job of that. If you look at some of the pitchers that have come through that program over the years, but it's really hard to balance development and winning with these players. And I just don't think that it works. Now on the pitching side, I've always said this. I think going to college is of great value, Ian, because there are certain things that you cannot replicate in the minor leagues. In the minor leagues for a hitter, you can replicate facing a really good pitching staff. Because you could face starters on rehab, you know, that are big league guys that have won Cy Youngs. We, you know, I've seen in the last year, Max Scherzer, you know, Garrett Cole, drawing a blank now. I saw another, Carlos Rodon.
Shane Bieber.
Like we've seen all of these guys in minor league games over the last year. So those batters are getting an opportunity to face a real big league arm. And some of the guys they face in the minor leagues, if you were in, you know, double A beginning of the season last year, you might have faced Nolan McClain. You might have faced Trey Savage if you were in double A in June or July, right? So, but when it comes to pitchers, it's really hard to replicate a good lineup in a pressure environment where I think with how hot the bats are and how, you know, contact plays in college baseball, plus the pressure environments when you're on the road and have to get a big out, I think there is an element that you cannot replicate in the minor leagues that you can in college baseball that you absolutely have to deal with when you get to the big leagues, whether you're pitching in May or you're pitching in September or October, that I do think a lot of that, just in terms of getting through a lineup, working through adversity, dealing with, you know, the pressure of trying to get those outs. I think college does a good job of that with a lot of pitchers. Now, I don't know if Jacob Mizierowski is Jacob Mizierowski if he doesn't sign with the Brewers and, you know, ends up in the SEC or the ACC. They may not know how to use him, right? I think the options and the roadways need to exist in terms of prep guys and JUCO guys, younger guys getting into professional baseball. Because sometimes they're just a better development fit for professional baseball.
Yeah, I think that's the other issue to me is that right now there's not enough colleges that are fully invested in the game of baseball right now to support the influx that would come with this proposal. You know, you're talking about every high schooler who gets drafted would now be going to college. And there are not enough teams that have 34 scholarships to support that type of those numbers. And it just would change a lot of the landscape of what we know about college baseball right now. As you said, I think with pitchers, it wouldn't be as big a deal as hitters. I think an underrated aspect of that too is, and maybe you know this better than I, do any college facilities have traject machines? I'm guessing no. Or maybe the top schools.
Yes, they do. I almost am 100% positive that North Carolina has a traject. Actually, okay, I know so, North Carolina has a traject machine.
Okay, so at least North Carolina.
But it's only going to be in the SEC.
You're right.
And a handful of schools in the ACC. Because like here, we live near Boston College. It's been awesome that Boston College's program has taken the step forward, joined the ACC. They've been a much more competitive program. We're a top 25 team. You know, they were under Gambino in those kind of final couple of years with, you know, Frelick and Morissette and Gold and all those guys, you know, Emmett Sheehan. But they can't afford.
They don't even have enough money to put into their basketball and football program. Yeah.
Yeah, they're not going and buying a trajectory, which is a $1 million investment.
Yeah.
And UNC's got the money. Mm-hmm. LSU probably has the money. Mississippi State maybe has the money. Georgia maybe has the money. Florida. But it's like, but even in the SEC, I can't say, like, Missouri isn't going to probably get a trajectory.
And the reason I bring that up, though, is because with hitters, like, what you're talking about with the quality of competition, it's not just that you have access, you're facing better players when you're in pro ball. It's that also when guys want to hit, they can just go hit on a track machine, because a lot of teams now have them either at their spring training facilities or at a lot. Some even have them at all their affiliates now. And I think about, like, someone we were talking about recently, Owen Ayers. He basically went and hit on the trajectory machine, I guess, all winter. And that's why he's turned around. A guy we're going to talk about here is the same boat. He spent all spring training hitting on a trajectory machine and has turned himself in from someone who wasn't on a top 30 list to start the season. Now he's going to be inside a system top 10. And access to something like that, where you can replicate major league quality pitching every single day and get hundreds of reps against it, that's just like the kind of access you're not going to get at the college level. And yeah, I think that it's just, I mean, and this is the thing, it's a proposal. It's not going to end up looking exactly this. But the thing that we've seen in these labor negotiations over and over again is that the MLBPA is very going to be probably willing to sacrifice if it's something that doesn't relate to people who are actually in the MLBPA. And that's, I know they've come out very strongly against it, which they should, because, I mean, the guys who will be in the MLBPA are the ones who get hurt the most by this, because they're going to get their salaries cut initially, and they're also going to hit free agency later. So it's a double whammy. It's great for MLB if this goes through as is. But at the same time, you know, this is a pretty good, is probably going to end up being one of their leverage points, where they can be like, hey, we'll trade off some, you know, some bonus salaries for guys who aren't in the PA yet in order to get actual, like, benefits to players in the PA later. So it'll be interesting to see how this develops, because, as you said, it has the chance, depending on how drastic it is, to just transform basically how talent gets added to pro ball. And obviously that is a huge impact in fantasy, because when you look, and I don't know about you, if you go to FYPDs, people don't really want college guys. They want the high upside high schoolers. And if that's gone from FYPDs or from, you know, the fantasy landscape, it's just going to completely reshape probably how you have to play in dynasty leagues.
I think so. I mean, I can see it working the other way, where all of a sudden you have, you know, players who are moving faster. I think we've definitely seen that with, like, the higher end college guys. But I also think a lot of our perspective on that has been a little jaded by how good the 23 and 24 classes are. Mm-hmm. Like, there aren't a lot of Paul Skeens, Nick Kurtz, et cetera, year after year. And I think if you look historically over the last 10 years of even college players in the top 10, the track record isn't great. No. It's really like, Pajak and I did a podcast on this years ago, but up until, like, the last couple of classes, it really hasn't been. There's been a lot more Christian Moores than there
have. Jacob Berry. Right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think you look at even Spencer Torkelson, right? Which was like this can't miss hitting prospect. And it took a long time. And he's never really been more than
fine.
Like a 50, he's what?
Yeah.
45, 50. I mean,
first base, what, 15 to 25?
Yeah.
15 to 20. Like,
yeah, exactly. You know, and then
whatever,
you know, you get guys like Vinny Pasquantino who are equally or more valuable, who go several rounds later, right?
Yeah.
In different drafts. But yeah, I think it's a really interesting proposal. But that said, I think it kind of leads perfectly into what we're going to talk about today. Some of the players we're going to dig into, who are all guys that could have been impacted in one way or another by some of these proposed changes, whether it's the increased age of signing in the international market, which I think might even be a bigger deal, because does it take away in an international draft? Is there some positives to that? Absolutely. But the best players in our game are coming from the international market and from high school more often than not, you know? And I mean, the best college guy is a guy like Aaron Judge, who went to Fresno State it wasn't like he was at an SEC school and went top five in the draft or something. He was a bit of a prospect, a project, even for the Yankees when he was drafted. So I think just putting all that into perspective. But that said, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we got six or seven names from the complex that are making some noise that we're going to talk to you about. So we'll be right back. All right. And we are back. Baseball America Fantasy Podcast, Jeff Ponce, Ian Kundle. Ian, we are talking about some standouts on the complex, guys that are really performing. I'm going to kick it over to you and put you in the spot. Let's talk about a couple of Red Sox players here. A battery, so to speak, a catcher and a pitcher. These are guys that in your work, you've kind of gotten feedback that these could be the best hitter and the best position player and the best pitcher in the Florida Complex League, or very close to that. No.
Yeah. I think Delzine, it's pretty clear he's the best pitcher in the FCL. It's not exactly a bumper crew down there this year. I think Primera is right up there with someone else we're going to talk about a little later as the best position player. But yeah, the Red Sox, you know, obviously the major league season hasn't gone as they wanted, but their FCL team has some really, really interesting players. And it even goes deeper than these guys. You know, you got like Dorian Soto, Harold Revis, they got a bunch of guys. But the top two standouts so far have been Franklin Primera and Sadbiel Delzin. Primera is an 18-year-old Venezuelan catcher. These aren't huge right now. I think that's probably the limiting factor, but he does everything else really well. His contact rate is insane. He, you know, he's really good approach, really advanced. And when he does make contact, he can barrel it. Like, it's not like they're terrible. Like, it's, you know, it's average-ish EVs. And he's 18, you know, 6 foot. There's a little bit of projection in the body, though. He's definitely filled out considerably since signing. And so far this season, he's hitting 450, 583, 750 in 109 plate appearances with almost twice as many walks as strikeouts. So, you know, obviously catchers can sometimes take longer to develop, but Primera looks like one of those guys that if he's available, even in 16 team league, I would be interested in rostering. Cause I think there's a chance that this is one of those, you know, exceptions to the rule where you've got a catcher with a contact foundation to build on, but also is showing flashes of power already. And he also has the defensive backbone because, you know, in the prospect handbook last year, he was rated the Red Sox best defensive catcher. So that wasn't saying a ton. The Red Sox catching depth was pretty bad heading into the offseason. But at the same time, you know, we've seen the bar catcher. If you can just be a fringy or even an average guy there and you can hit, teams are going to find playing time for you. And Primera looks like he has a chance to hit for average, put on high on base, and maybe even tap into a little power eventually. He does have 6 home runs already this year. Delzin is more of your typical projection play. He's a 6'6", 250-pound right-hander who throws 100 miles an hour and has several bat-missing secondaries. He sits in the mid-90s already. As I said, it's a huge frame. He's got a slider, changeup, and a sweeper. They all miss bats. Like, I think this is, you know, obviously the track record with Latin pitchers is not the best, but Delzin is kind of looks like an outlier size wise. And I don't know. I like to target pitchers who are outliers. And I think there's a chance that that's just what he could be. He's got a 1.98 ERA this year in 27 and a third innings. He's allowed only 13 hits with 32 strikeouts. He's going 6 plus innings, which in the FCL, which is unheard of, especially this season when the pitching on a lot of teams is awful. I mean, you've seen some of these run totals. It's not great. So, I think Delzin and Primera are two guys that, you know, when you're getting into deeper dynasty leagues are definite buys for me right now.
Yeah. And I had grabbed Primera on your suggestion a couple weeks ago on my 30 team league. And yeah, it looks like as he continues to just say scorching hot at the plate the last couple of weeks.
Every day it's two hits.
Yeah. It's been one of those that I was like, I wish this guy was an outfielder because he'd be like a prime trade candidate. Everyone would be knocking down my door. Well, but
because that's the thing is because he's a catcher, it's probably going to take longer for him to develop than maybe some of the other names we're going to talk here. But at the same time, you know, if he gets up to the majors and is still catching, the payoff could be worth it because, I mean, the state of the catching position right now is brutal. I mean, there's, what, 5 or 6 guys who matter, and then everything else is just you might as well pick them up off waivers.
And I think we've seen some guys like this over the last several years that pop in the complex, And then, you know, the feedback is like this, and then they continue to move up.
Reino Rodriguez
yep. is one. Certainly, I was maybe a little bit more bat focused than the glove. I think you can point to like a Franco Alvarez, Francisco Alvarez. Francisco Alvarez, when he was, you know, on the complex at that point, was kind of similar feedback to that. And I think Salas was way different because that was like spring training and just weird.
That's true. He didn't even play in the complex because he was straight to low A. Yeah,
I think like Briseño is one that kind of came to mind for me. I think Samuel Basayo is another where like that whatever happens in the DSL happens in the DSL. And it's so hard to kind of contextualize a lot of those numbers. And those guys are so young. This is like a big level up year for these guys. They come stateside. They're working with the PD group at the main complex, et cetera, yada, yada, yada. Those guys can make a really big jump in a year. And I think we kind of see one every year. And they're typically are guys that, you know, kind of launch themselves into the top 100. It wouldn't be shocking if that happens with Primera. Changing topics here. Another player I wanted to talk about. Really interesting one in Josh Owens of the Rangers. He was a third round pick last year out of Tennessee Prep area. So, you know, we're talking about another high school guy here, two-way player. I got really mixed feedback on Owens the day of the draft and then kind of following. Some thought this was a really bad pick. Some weren't sure if the bat was ever going to hit, if he was more of a pitcher and that he was fairly raw there. A year later, this looks like a great pick. Granted, it is ACL performance, but he has been a stud as both a pitcher and a hitter. So he only got 24 at-bats last year. So let's just put that into perspective. It wasn't a lot. He struck out in 11 of those at-bats, Ian. That's a little bit of a concern. Hit.
It's not great.
083, 083, 125. It's about as bad as you could be at the plate. Only had 3 total bases, 2 hits over those 24. At bats this year, things have changed a little bit. In 28 games, he's already got 7 home runs. He's hitting 305, 387, 598. And the underlying data really is not bad, Ian. Now, there is significant swing and miss here. I mean, we have a 25% in zone miss rate on the complex. That tells me that this is at best a 40 hit tool, probably more like a 30.
Yeah.
That said, he's aggressive on pitches in the zone. There is absolutely above average or better power here. There's some inconsistency in some of those numbers, but you know, you look at some of the underlying data and the expected slash line is really not that far off from what his actual slash line is. And the number that I kind of jump on here with him as a hitter, 108 90th percentile EV. The average is a little lower, 86.4. That's just a matter of like inconsistent contact from a young player that's learning to hit. But there is absolutely some power gold in that bat. That said, I don't know if he ends up as a shortstop or as a position player or if he ends up as a pitcher. His stuff on the mound is also really, really interesting. Sits 94 to 96 miles per hour, has been up as high as 98. It's a lower arm slot. The release point is super low. It's like 55 inch height. So it's like under 5 feet. Right. And it's a four seam because of sort of the angle that it comes at, but it moves like a two seamer. It's under 8 inches of induced vertical break with around 18 inches of arm side run. Heavy spin on this pitch, 2,400 to 2,500 RPMs consistently. It's got a 16.2% swing strike rate. Granted, that is in the complex, but there's not a lot of left-handers that are low and slingy like that, that throw that hard with that kind of movement, with those kind of spin traits. And then you can kind of mix in a slurvy short slider in the low to mid 80s. No changeup really to speak of at this point. There is something that looks like a changeup that he's thrown a handful of times. If that is truly his changeup, it's a higher spin, sort of nearly negative vert kind of changeup. So there is, you know, a decent amount of plane separation between that and the fastball. It's a really interesting player. I don't know what direction this goes though, Ian. Like if you're rostering this guy in fantasy, you're kind of holding on to him for like the novelty of it almost to an extent of like, this guy's really talented. There's a ton of tools here on like both sides of the ball. He can pitch, he can hit, defensive ability, but like, where does it go? I don't know. So I think for me and with a player like this, it's hard for me to probably roster Josh Owens in any league where 250 prospects or less are rostered. I don't know what your thoughts are on Owens.
Owens, it's tricky because as a two-way player, what you said as a two-way player, I'd almost prefer he pick a lane because his development is probably going to be slower because he's a two-way player. It's going to take him time. And as you said, it's just hard. You know, the only guy who's really made this work is Ohtani. You know, there's been a lot of other guys have tried and it usually fizzles out at some point and they do have to pick a lane. And I feel like with Owens, what you described, he's probably going to end up on the mound long-term just because of the contact issues. And if he does end up at the plate, 30 hit guys, that's an iffy profile unless you have like 70 raw. So yeah, I think he's an interesting like name to follow in terms of the athleticism, but I agree with you. Unless it's like the deepest of deep leagues, he's someone that I'm kind of taking a more wait and see approach. I'm not going to go all in on right now because it's really hard to be a two-way player in the minors these days.
Yeah, I don't understand how this would actually work. It's just it's very, very difficult. But I think you probably have another player here that you want to talk about. So let me kick it back to you. Who's the next complex guy you want to dig into?
I think another good one, I'll stick with Florida, is the one of the guys, probably the guy who would challenge Primera for the crown as the best position player in the Florida Complex League so far, and that's Leonardo Reyes, who's an outfielder with the Twins. He is just doing everything. He's hitting for average. He's hitting for power. And it kind of a little bit come out of nowhere because as he was the guy I was alluding to earlier who was not in the top 30 heading into the year. You know, decent numbers in the DSL last year, but he wasn't a huge bonus guy. He got a couple hundred thousand. Didn't have a ton of like, you know, notes on him or internal feedback. And so, and then this was the big one. And I was worried when I started seeing these numbers and started getting some reports from people down in Florida being like, hey, this guy's might be really good. I got really concerned. I was like, did I just miss this guy in spring training? It turns out he didn't play in spring training. So we dodged one there. It was not like we were at, cause I was at the Twins backfields a ton this spring. And I don't remember seeing a 6'3", you know, slugging, left-handed hitting outfielder. And so I was like, did I really completely miss it? But no, he was hurt this spring, didn't play, got started and extended, and he's really taken off since there. He took a big step forward heading in the offseason, then kind of coming stateside, he's really taken to that, being able to, you know, just go to the park every day, play, hit off the traject machine, things like that. Yeah, and so far it's working. He's hitting 350, 470, 688 in the FCL. And the tools are really loud. You know, it's easy plus raw. The EV is his 90th percentile. EV is 107.4 miles an hour. Hard hit rate's almost 48%. And he, unlike Owens, he's got the average EV to back it up too. You know, his average EV is 92.4. And, you know, these are marks that would be good for a 25-year-old major leaguer, let alone an 18-year-old. But what makes him such an interesting prospect to me is he combines hit with actually good contact ability. 14% in zone miss rate, 23% chase rate, good barrel rate. The angles are good. You know, there's a lot to like here. He's pretty good athlete. He's got some defensive value. You know, this isn't like a lumbering corner outfielder, which I think you sometimes have to worry about when you see sluggers in the complex league. Because at the end of the day, positional value does matter in fantasy in the sense that if they can play a decent spot, they can keeps them in the lineup. And he's going to be a decent enough outfielder that you're not going to have to worry about that. And there's upside with the hit tool and the power here. You know, this is a guy that I think similar to Primera, wouldn't surprise me if he takes to full season ball next year. We see him on a top 100 list at some point in the next couple of years.
Yeah. I agree with that. I think he's been a really interesting one. Cause like, as you said, like we're down there, we're seeing a lot of these players, we're hearing from other scouts on players that we need to see, you know, when we're in the area. I mean, you were down in Florida for 10 days a week.
Like
I was down there for, just about 2 weeks. So, I mean, there was a lot of time. We had a little overhang. You were there a little earlier. I was there a little later. We were all around the state and Reyes never comes up.
Nope,
and I feel like most of these other guys, if we've heard something about him, if they were out there in spring training. So it's interesting how stuff like that can still sneak through. It's why this is a 12-month a year business. You got to stay on top. You never know when, you know, the next name is going to pop. And I think it's exciting. You look at Reyes, like there's a good combination, a good blend of hit tool and power. And, you know, those are the kind of guys that you want to buy into, especially in the complex, because the contact rates, the plate skill stuff is all probably going to back up once they get to a full season level.
Yeah.
You kind of want that to be good enough that, like, all right, like that adjustment period is going to be a lot softer than it's going to be for, like, I remember like Robert Kalas coming off the complex. Like, he had a ton of homers. The power was there. He's catching barrels. Like, all those metrics look good. But then you're like, there's a 24% in zone whiff rate here. Like, what's that going to look like once he gets up the A ball? And certainly that was something that he ultimately struggled with. The next name that I'm going to throw out here, and this is one that I know the Robo Scout likes a lot. So shout out to our good friend Dylan White on this one, but that's Alexander Frias. Cue the Breaking Bad meme with he can't keep getting away with this with the Brewers. They continue to just absolutely crush the international market. Every single year, there are one or two players that we're excited about with the Brewers. Right now, it's Alexander Frias. 407, 496, 648, four home runs, 16 walks to 21 strikeouts, 11 stolen bases. Does have six caught stealing, so not exactly the most efficient base dealer. Over 30 games in the complex with the Brewers. I would imagine that this one has to be pushing toward a promotion to Wilson at some point. Because when you're hitting 407 at any level for a month, it's probably time to move up, regardless of how lucky you've been on balls in play. Hitting 400 for a sustained period of time, even in like Babe Ruth high school baseball, that's pretty crazy. So,
yeah,
Frias, left-handed bat. There's really good power here too, Ian. A 106.2 90th percentile EV, a 116.3. I don't have confirmed that that is 100% real.
I think it. I think it is, because I'm pretty sure
the other metrics. It looks pretty real, man.
I think the Brewers tweeted it that.
Yeah, 91.6.
So
average EV, 51.2 hard hit rate, and this comes with decent, not great, but decent contact numbers. It's a 20% in zone miss rate, 28% chase rate to a 48% swing rate. It's a high heart swing of 75%. It's a really high barrel rate of 22.9%. The contact rate overall at 72.6 is almost like squarely average. Is there going to be some swing and miss in this profile? Maybe some approach questions as he's a little bit more aggressive once it gets up to a higher level. Sure. But there's enough of a blend of like hit tool and power here with the type of power. I mean, we're talking about projectable 70 power based on the metrics that we're seeing here and the ability to get to the barrel, right? Because it's not just hitting it hard. It's hitting it hard with while minimizing topspin, right? And I think people out there that are golfers, you understand the guys that hit the big majestic drives versus the guys that hit those low liner drives. Both can be really good. But if you're trying to hit for power, you're trying to hit for impact in a baseball game where there's fielders out there, hitting it with backspin and hitting it hard with backspin is the name of the game. So Frias, to me, is a name to definitely cue in on. If he's available in your leagues, go out there and bid on him. There is definitely some smoke here that's worth kind of pursuing. I don't know if you had any thoughts on Frias, if you want to move on to your next name.
No, I completely agree. He's someone that I've been rostering in a few leagues very early on this offseason. He was a target for one of the Brewers, was a large proportion of it, but also some interesting underlying stuff there. And I think that even there might even be more power that like game power that he's not showing yet, because the ground ball rate's a little high. It's like 48% right now. So if he can start elevating the ball more consistently, yeah, this is a guy who I think that there's a substantial amount of upside here in his profile. Final guy for me is someone who actually was recently promoted. He was sent up to low A. He is now in the Midwest League, I believe. He's in the Florida State League now. It is Sebastian Dos Santos, not De Los Santos, as I stupidly made the mistake in one league thinking he was not in the Fantrax player pool when it turns out he was already rostered. Sebastian Dos Santos, who is a shortstop for the Cardinals, and obviously Cardinals player dev is humming along right now, as is their major league team. And Dos Santos is a really interesting guy because unlike, you know, some of the other guys, we're talking a lot of like corner outfielders or a catcher in Primera. He's a shortstop. He's an up the middle guy. And obviously, you know, we've seen the track record, or, you know, that's the upside right there. That's the ceiling plays is guys you can stick at short. There's been a long track record of, you know, of a Latin shortstop prospects over the last few years. I mean, just look at our top 100. The top two players are both international signees at shortstop. And Dos Santos has a really interesting blend of data. The EVs are above average for the age. You know, it's a 103, 290th, 109.7 max. And what really interests me with him, though, is that he also blends that with good swing decisions and really, really good in-zone contact rate. It's a 13% in-zone whiff, so 87% zone contact, which is well above average. And so you're making good swing decisions, and when it's a pitch in the zone, you're making good contact. You know, that's what I like to see. And it's, you know, and obviously this is not a direct player comp, but it reminds me of some of the data you used to see with Franklin Arias back when he was in the complex, you know, really high in zone, or really low in zone whiff, high zone contact, you know, decent EVs, but nothing that stands out. And, you know, you look what happened to him is he physically matured and has kind of parlayed that into being one of the top 10 prospects in all of baseball. So Dos Santos is a really interesting guy to me to follow, especially now that he's the one guy of this crew who's been promoted. He's listed at 6 foot, 140 pounds. I'm going to guess he's not 140 pounds anymore. He's probably a little heavier than that, but you know, the Cardinals clearly were confident in him because they promoted him. And if you look at his like surface level stats, you know, they don't stand out as much as some of these other guys. He was only hitting .264 with a .429 on base and a .586 slug. Obviously the OBP and slug are excellent, but that average is a little lower than a lot of these guys. But now, you know, they felt very confident in him and they've promoted him to low A. So I think he's going to be a fascinating new watch. Cause if he hits it all in low A, I feel like his stock is going to shoot up substantially just because of the level of competition he's doing it against versus some of these other guys who are just still in the complex.
Yeah. And I think a big part of that is of all the guys we've talked about, he probably has the best plate skills, right? Like really low in zone miss rate. Really
him or Primera. I'd say Primera might be better, but yeah.
Yeah. I think, you know, yeah, depending upon what they're seeing, right? He's seeing different pitchers than Primera's seeing. So I guess it depends how much you like the Braves.
Yeah, the pitching in the South Florida pod isn't great.
Yeah. Where like the East Coast pod really isn't bad. You know, you're talking Nats, you're talking Mets, who have some pretty decent pitching development at the moment. You're talking Astros, who can kind of always run some arms out there. And then, of course, they probably see a ton of these Marlins guys who had a really talented crop of pitchers last year in the Dominican Summer League. So, yeah, I kind of wonder, you know, but overall, not as much power as Primera, but really good plate skills and certainly one that's worth paying attention to. Last guy that I'm going to throw out here, this is somebody that was a top 10 pick last year, was fairly hyped in FYPDs. We were really early on kind of hyping this guy up. I got a lot of comparisons to Trey Turner, and that's Steele Hall. You know, insane athlete, one of the best athletes in last year's draft. There were some question marks, I think, for a lot of people that saw him in extended, just in terms of what the swing looked like. But if there's something, there's a lesson to be taken here. We've seen so many of these high school guys kind of come into pro ball. They have that like extended period that I would say is almost from like post signing day when they kind of report all the way to like their first game of minor league spring training the next year. There is like a 6 to 7 month period here where they really get to get dialed in, focus on swing changes, get comfortable with him. We saw it happen with Connor Griffin. We saw how much he's taken off. He's not the only one. And I think when you look at some of these elite athletes, guys that maybe don't come, you know, Hall's from Alabama. Griffin's from Mississippi. They're not seeing California, Florida, Texas, Georgia, North Carolina kind of high school competition. They're seeing good, I mean, better than what we're seeing here in Massachusetts, but they're not seeing the same level of competition. The adjustments have to be made. And so far, so good. You know, over 35 games in his professional career, Hall was hitting 315, 423, 581 with 7 home runs. The contact skills are a little fringy. The swing decisions are okay. There's decent but not great power here. The thing that's funny, though, is despite the good chase rate, all that sort of thing, you know, he's working deep in accounts. He's fouling balls off. He's making guys work. Some of the stuff that's not showing up kind of in the data, I think when you dig into it, you talk to people that have seen Steele Hall, that's one of the reasons that the numbers and the performance is what it is. He also has this plus-plus speed, getting the bat on the ball, getting the ball in play. His legs allow things to happen. It will be interesting to see where this goes. Now, the Reds have not had a great track record lately with some of these high upside position player prospects they've drafted, you know, domestically. LED Cruz is obviously a very different story. But yeah, I think, you know, we sort of look at Tyson Lewis, and it's not really been very good, right? And he was another guy that hit a lot of home runs in the complex. The numbers looked a little bit better. And then as soon as he got to full season ball, things really cratered. You know, to the point that this season over 45 games, he's hit 228, 294, 344. Numbers weren't quite as good as what Hall's are right now when he was in the complex last year. But, you know, I guess actually we're pretty comparable. 340, 396, 532, I guess a little bit more on base ability and around the same amount of slug. So different players, both big athletes, both guys that had some hit tool questions. So pump the brakes a little bit. But as somebody who is a big advocate for Hall right now, he's an exciting player. And I think if I'm rebuilding, he's maybe not like a prime target I'm going after, but maybe in a smaller piece, if he's a piece that you can get for a mid-rotation starter or somebody that's going to help that competing team at this moment, probably a good deal to make. Maybe a good secondary piece in a bigger deal, a fiduciary piece in a bigger deal. Kind of think that's where you're at right now. It's upside that's worth gambling, but I wouldn't overpay just based on what the potential risk is still. I think if we're talking about an organization that's maybe, if we were talking about the Pirates, I probably might be a little bit more positive, which I don't think I ever would have said that 4 or 5 years ago when comparing and contrasting the Pirates and the Reds, but kind of is where we are at. So there you go. I think those are 7 names, Ian, that we went through here. Went on a full 45 minutes or so for you. Hope you guys all have a great weekend. Enjoy the College World Series, Cape Cod League, minor league baseball, Major League Baseball. We got all levels of ball going on right now. Get out there, get to a ball field, check some games out.